Hey, it's Ash Zane, and you're listening to I Got Questions. This week, I interview Menu. Menu is my father, by choice. By that, I mean he's not my biological father. He came into our lives after our biological father left us. And not only did he fill that void, but he has been and was a better father in every way. I couldn't wait to ambush him and put a microphone in front of him. He's always been intelligent, well-read, and an activist, and I want to find out why. He's always been different, and I want to know why he thinks the way he does and the path that led him there. He loves to tell stories, but I wasn't sure how candid he would be. Even when I told him I wanted to record him, he asked a few times, somewhat jokingly, what I want to ask him. So I didn't know what to expect, but it went so well, and he was so candid that we recorded for an hour and a half. So I split this episode into two parts. In this first part, I ask Menu about his childhood, his life during the Islamic Revolution in Iran, why he joined a Kurdish rebel group, and how he eventually escaped Turkey to ultimately get to Canada. Enjoy. Hi, Menu.
Hey, Ash.
Are you nervous?
No. Well, should I be?
Are you sure?
Should I be nervous?
What don't you want me to ask you about?
I don't know what you mean by that. I mean, personal life.
Whatever.
My very popular life. Which one?
What's going to risk, one, your immigration and your job?
No, everything you ask about me is going to risk something from some anger.
Okay, where were you born? What?
Well, I was born in a city called Kermanshah, which is a part of Kurdistan. And
in Iran.
That's it. In Iran, yeah.
Kurdistan is what?
It is a province.
Like officially?
Officially, yeah, on the paper, but in reality, no one knows really.
What does that mean?
It means every province has its own, like, people running the province, but in Kurdistan it's different. Why? They send people from the central government, mostly Persian people, to keep eye on things. That's why you don't really officially have a Kurdistan person. You have Kurdish people talking in Kurdish and wearing those clothes in that area, but when it comes to governing,
yeah,
you always have people like Persian people, almost Shia people.
Do they care that you speak?
Oh, yes. I was educated in Persian.
But now, today, do you know?
It's still, even now, the teacher, even though they're both Kurdish students, they cannot speak in mother tongue. They have to speak in,
Kurdish.
In Persian.
Persian. Outside, like if you're just walking down the street.
Yeah, you can speak
Kurdish. Nobody cares.
Nobody cares, yeah.
What about parties and weddings?
Well, the culture is kind of different. In Persian-speaking area, the woman and men do not get mixed in parties. But in Kurdistan, yeah, they're mixed. They're wearing their own traditional clothing. The hijab thing is not that hard.
Okay.
But, as I said, it's only in the Kurdish area.
What was your childhood like?
Well, I had a pretty abusive mother. She almost beat me on a daily basis. But my father never laid hand on me, except one time.
Did
he saw me smoking.
How old were you?
I was like 15.
That's not that young.
Well, I was young for him.
Okay.
I mean, and he got very upset. He slapped me once. I tried to complain about the how hard he hit me.
Yeah.
And he slapped me on the other side. And I forgot about complaining. So that was one time. But yeah, I always got beaten by my mom because I wasn't like a very quiet child.
No.
I was experimenting everything.
No.
Let's say, I remember very well, I got lost. It was like 5 years old. And I asked for an airplane. One which has a four engine and turns when you push them.
Okay, a toy.
And it was way back. It was very expensive. It was almost half of my father's monthly salary. Okay. And once she found me after I got lost, probably she said, oh God, if I find him, I'm going to buy him the plane. We bought the plane. We came home. Plane was intact at 12 noon. And by 5 p.m., you would find every piece, every which way or where at the house. And they asked me, why did you break it up? And my answer was, I want to see how it works. So I was that kind of child. For that, I would go in trouble every time.
What about school? kind of student were?
Well, I was a good student, but I was exactly the way in the school. I was hyper active. Every fight I was involved in, every adventure I was part of, and I was a student who would get picked out to be punished for anything happened in the school.
So. Were you popular with your friends?
No. I wouldn't call it popular. Yeah, I was famous. But
famous.
Not for a good reason.
Okay.
For breaking windows, for losing the ball, hitting it so hard and going to the neighboring buildings. For things like that. I wasn't the cool guy who was wearing Nike and everybody was following him.
What was a cool guy in your school?
Well, cool guy back then, it wasn't like if you have dye your hair like a Justin Bieber. Cool guy was the guy who would stand up for himself or for the others. And basically, he would talk back to the teacher. And to do so, you had to be a certain size. And I was a little child. I couldn't play that role. So
why does size matter? You have to be bigger than the teacher?
Well, sometimes. Actually, the way it goes in countries like Iran, they beat you when you're young.
Yeah.
And when you're in your teenage years and you're getting the muscles, you're the one who beat the teacher. As I did hit my parents' principal at the 12th grade. And if it wasn't because of some teachers coming in between us, I would have hurt him very bad.
Why did you hit him?
Because he pushed me to go to listen to Quran in the beginning at the morning.
Okay.
Prayer, you know.
Yeah.
And I was avoiding it at any cost. And one time he singled me out. Standing just beside the regime official agent, he singled me out by name. That why are you always trying to not to show up for the Quran reading? And I went later back to his office. You next time you say something like that. And by then, my school was already changed name because the last principal was shot by one of the students because the last principal was for regime. He was kind of leaning toward regime and harassing students.
Okay.
And then I threatened my principal in a way. I said, listen, this school already had one name change. Don't make me do it twice.
And
that was very easy. I mean, it wasn't so taboo back then because everybody knew who he is and everybody knew my family.
So they named the school after the principal?
After the principal who got shot by the student because the guy was harassing students. He was pushing them. He was giving them to Pasdaran. You know who's Pasdaran, right?
Yeah.
The police, Islamic police of Iran. So someday, one of the students just got the weapon and just killed the guy. And then they changed the name from Reza Shah Kabir to Qasri, which was the guy's last name.
What happened to the guy who shot the principal?
Well, he later became a Peshmerga. Nobody can touch him.
They didn't find him?
No.
They didn't find him?
No, they're not that good.
Okay.
They're just good with the unarmed people. They cannot handle.
Was your family religious?
No, not really. My
father. Because they're Kurdish?
Not because of only that. Because you have religious people in Kurdistan. It's not that they're nowhere to find. But my family particularly wasn't religious.
And you never asked them, why aren't we Muslim? Or
well, actually, it wasn't even
a thing
to ask. I just brought up listening to my father cursing against any kind of religion, okay. Right? So it was kind of, he's right. For example, one of his saying was, we were lucky that Ali, instead of the sword, didn't have a caliber 50.
I don't understand why.
You know, Ali is in a hadith says he killed 5,000 people in one day with his sword. Right? And my father was saying we were lucky as a human species that he didn't have 50 caliber machine gun. Otherwise, there wouldn't be anybody left. Right? Yeah. So I grew up in that kind of mentality.
Oh, I know where you get it from.
Yeah. So.
Okay. What did you do after high school?
It kind of different if I explain it to you. Back then, now the drafting for army is
mandatory.
You cannot just say, well, I don't feel like it. You have to go, right?
What age?
As soon as you got your high school diploma.
So if you keep failing.
18, yeah. So we kept, because you have to compete over there. For example, when I...
For university?
For university, I was, the whole courses from, let's say, cooking all the way to PhD in electronic, all of them combined would have 40,000 seats every year.
Right? Combined?
Combined.
This is national?
Every college and university.
Okay.
Right? Now, I, in my first year, I was competing with 860,000 students for that 40,000 seats, right? So, if you wouldn't get the one you were waiting for, what you do, you don't go to whole exams at the end of your 12th year. You keep two of them, actually three of them, to make sure if you make it to the course you want, then you go and pass those three at the end of summer. If you don't, you just don't go for your exam and you fail the 12th grade, and then legally you can continue until next year.
Okay.
You compete again, right?
Fine, and you don't have to go to the army until
then you have to. So, because in my family we had a doctor, so it was a curse, I had to become a doctor. What happened? The first year I got geology.
Okay.
I got like a very nice course. Between 840,000, I became number 13.
In what?
In one particular course, which would have made me geologist.
Okay.
It wasn't doctor. I had an order from my mom to not to go for the...
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so then second year I got...
Can I just tell you how proud my mom would be if either one of us got accepted for geology?
Well, different time, different value, yeah. Right? So the second time I got agricultural engineering, which wasn't a doctor again. So that one, actually, no, I'm mistaken. The other one wasn't 13. This one was number 13. And why I was number 13? Because I was competing at the national level. I wasn't competing. I was so proud not competing at the Kurdistan level.
Can you
which
pick?
Was the fourth, yeah. If you would compete in national, which was called first area, you didn't have to give the government two time of your, for example, if you study for 7 years in university, you had to work 14 years, whichever part of Iran the government would send you, if you wouldn't be a part of the first area.
Because they pay for the school.
They pay for everything, but the first area has so much benefit,
yeah,
that they say, okay, if you can make it to this area, you don't have, you're not obligated to give us a guarantee to work wherever we want to. You can work anywhere you want. So I was so high. I don't know. I wasn't even smoking anything, but I was so high.
Yeah.
I don't know why I compete in that level, but I got 13 and it was pretty good. I tried to convince my mom, hey, this is good. This is even better from of some doctors from grade 4 or 5. And this, she said, no. My son will become doctor.
Can I tell you how proud my mom would be if I got into well, anything with engineering?
Well, let me see how your mom would be proud after I say the third time. Okay. Just a second. Okay, the third time. Now, you have 14 choices.
14?
14. 14 university.
Oh, okay, okay.
Okay. You say, okay, I want my 13, all 13, the third time. And this, by the way, this is the last time I'm allowed to fail.
Okay.
After that, if you fail, you're going to go directly to army. Yeah. And it was, keep in mind, it was right in the middle of the Iran-Iraq war.
Post-revolution, 1980 yeah, something?
I'm talking 1981. Okay. Make a long story short, the third time, I barely made it because by then, I already finished the exam, but there was a letter coming to me from university, people who were in charge of accepting students.
Yeah.
They said, Mr. Brothers Manuchar Sorabi, yeah, brother.
Yeah.
You are not qualified. Then there was a blank
okay.
area. In that blank area, they said, from political point of view,
okay.
to join any of our highly recognized institutional education system, for this and that reason. And the whole reason was, I had four of my uncles as a political prisoners, and one of them was fighting in a guerrilla warfare with regime, and they knew that they're my uncle. That's all my fault. I didn't do anything.
That's a pretty good reason.
Well,
there's a pattern in your family.
Yeah, from their point of view, I'm going to do something, right?
They weren't wrong.
So they said, and then my father said, listen, go to the army the first month that they're going to teach you, like boot camp. If they don't release the second wave of acceptance and your name is not included that, I'm going to come and take you out myself. Well, he has a connection.
Okay.
Like he was in army for 33 years.
Is that what he did for a living?
Yeah, he was in army for 33 years. After 33 years, he got retired.
Okay.
So he knew a couple of people. Yeah. And then, okay, I promised him. I went just before the 3 months is over. I got acceptance from university, but not doctor.
Yeah.
Because my 14th course, after 13 doctor, I chose nursing.
Okay.
And because competition is so high, and I being the idiot competing with the first level of students, I couldn't make it to the doctor. I made it to university, but as a nursing. And then I didn't really like it because by then I was involved in the political party.
Yeah.
They asked me to transfer to Kurdistan. And because I couldn't transfer to Kurdistan, I told the university that I don't want to continue education. Even before I start the class, I was in class like a week.
I have a million questions, but before we move on to this part, what did you do for fun in growing up?
Well, what you have in mind for fun, or millennial who might listen to this for fun, is totally different.
Which iPhone did you have growing up? did you even have a phone in your
house? Actually, yeah. The first time we had a phone, it was when I was grade 11. Because back then it was very expensive to bring a landline to home. And it would even immediately would raise the value of your property. So that was how big of a deal it was. People would come to our home to get the phone call or make a call.
And did you do that to other people's houses before you had a phone?
Personally, me, I didn't have anybody to call. But probably if my mom or my dad had called some relative, yeah, probably that way. But I couldn't even care less.
So what did you do for fun? It's a Friday.
Well, no. Remember Atari? Are you familiar with Atari games?
Yeah, yeah.
So that back then, it was new and it was beautiful and it was like attractive to us.
You had a TV.
I personally didn't have that game. Yes, we had a TV, but I would have go to my uncle because my cousin had one.
Everyone's like, we grew up. Our cousins had nice things.
Well, because everybody had a rich cousin. We weren't rich. We were just getting by, right?
Yeah, yeah.
For example, I had one pair of shoes that year. If I would have destroyed the first month, that was 11 months of bare feet. I remember Atari, it was very nice. I was captivated by the technology. How they know that the ball goes, well, we were new, right? Okay. Then the other fun, we were involved in the sporting, like I was best swimmer, I was best volleyball player, I was best soccer, in my mind, of course. And we were active like that outside. We weren't like some couch potato, they call it
couch
these
potato,
days.
Yeah.
Yeah, we weren't like that. That's why, you know, after all these years, I'm still kind of alive.
You look like Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah.
People can't see you, but I'll describe
don't mention his name. People would know that I beat his ass, but anyway. Fun was like that. You go for swimming, you get together with your friends, have a barbecue outside, then have a football.
Just adventure.
Just seems like and Atari. That's it.
Okay. You went to boot camp for like 3 months?
Yes. And
what was boot camp?
My God, by the end, before that I came out, if you would have asked me, do you remember your previous life? I would say no, because first of all, they call it Gurhan. It's like a group given to some officer, like 203 people.
Okay.
We were all graduated from high school amongst 10,000 soldiers, which they were like us, but they weren't graduated. The only people who were graduated was these two 203 people. And because of that, we were chosen to be trained by Green Beret.
Okay.
It sounds good, sounds cool, but it means you're absolutely officially fucked, because every day, every one of us had to have one MG, I don't know what they call it, it's a machine gun.
Okay.
It used to be used in World War II by Germans. It's heavy.
Yeah.
And every one of us, 203 of us, every day had to start walking at about 4 a.m. My luck, it was right in the middle of winter. Doesn't matter if it's raining, it's snowing, it's icing, people would shoot you. Doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
So imagine almost 85 day and night, wearing your boots, being wet, being always tired, but extremely energetic and ready, because the food was good, training was good, but life was absolutely shitty.
How did you do for 3 months? Like, you were athletic.
Yeah, imagine, I was athletic and I was fucking tired all the time.
How happy were you when your dad took you out?
My dad didn't take me out.
You got into school?
Yeah, I was accepted by university just to get out. As soon as I got out,
I'll take nursing.
Yeah, that was the story. But I remember very bad. That's 85 days. Probably the hardest time I had.
How often do you think about it?
Well, whenever somebody like you is bad enough to bring it up.
Bring it up. Yeah. Let's talk more about it.
Yeah. Let's see.
The food was good, but it was hard.
What's happening there back then?
You know, I'm not surprised that you would say, you know what? The food wasn't bad.
Well, they knew what they want you to do. They had to feed you good. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able
energy.
To do that.
You went to all boys school, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in the first year of the revolution, for a very short period of time, I was in a city called Rizaya. They call it Urumiya now. I was in a high school acceptance named Jama, which that particular high school was mixed.
Oh.
But only a few months, maybe 2 months after revolution, they just made it all girls, and we went.
Before the revolution, was it still all boys?
Yeah, yeah. There were tons of schools and primary schools and high schools which were mixed before revolution.
Did you go to a mixed school?
No, I was in a all-boy primary school.
Okay.
But I could see. I could see a lot of mixed schools. This wasn't a big deal.
Can we talk about you becoming an activist? I don't know what you want to call it. I want you to stay in this country.
Look, it's not only me. It's that part of the world is totally different than people in the developed countries like Western Europe or North America. Back there, people have some sort of better understanding of the meaning of the life. People know what's going on. At any stage or level of your life, you're exposed to some sort of activism. Even if you don't like it, you're going to be a part of it. Imagine, put yourself in my shoes. You're 15 years old. People are yelling and kicking police in the street, turning over the police car, putting it on fire. You get excited.
Is this the year of the revolution?
That was the exact year of the revolution, right? You get excited.
Yeah.
And if you ask me, when did I become involved? Probably the first time I hit the street after I heard that people are coming in the street. It's almost 40 years.
So it wasn't a hard choice because it was kind of happening around you.
It wasn't any choice at all because of my age. It's stupid if I say I had a conscious mind when I was 15 and I knew everything about war. So basically for us, for my group, it was just following the flaw of the whatever it was on the street. Well, obviously, for some reason, I was leaning to the left. I wasn't religious. I never been. And I didn't like what they had as a...
To offer?
Yeah, slogan. I didn't like it.
Yeah.
So at the very beginning, I was a left activist. But looking at it right now, 15 years old kid, what do you know?
I don't know any. I still don't know anything.
No, I mean, just put yourself in my... when people come and say, oh, that kid in Lebanon goes and shoots Israeli, they don't know shit. They just get excited because they see, okay, Marxism is very good and their picture would be hang around big and people would be proud of them. The guy doesn't understand the concept of life, yet he starts giving away everything he has or she has.
Were you recruited or did you just join?
No, actually, I wasn't the type who goes and try to convince people. I was busy doing my things. For example,
no, but I mean, did anyone approach you to say join our cause?
No, as soon as they, look, it was kind of unofficially known that people knew in the school who you are. They knew immediately. And if you wouldn't be in that club, they would be surprised. They didn't need to ask you.
Okay, okay.
Like they know, for example, if they see me going to Friday prayer, they would say, what the fuck are you doing, man?
Yeah, right? I understand that. Did you have, maybe before or after this, when you thought about hey, when I'm 30 or 40, did you have a picture in your head?
No. Honestly, especially when you really get involved with those kind of activities, you live for that day.
Oh, no, even before, when you're like 12 and you're thinking, oh, when I grow up, I want to be.
Let me tell you, there are things in my mind, which when I later think about it, It was amazing for my age. For example, there is a custom in Iran when you get married, everybody would gather at the end of the night to be witness that when you have a sex with your wife has a handkerchief to show the blood, proving that she's been a virgin up to that point.
I've seen a lot of cultures have this.
Me, growing up in that culture, that was at the back of my mind that I was to the point that I would say to myself, fuck it, I'm not going to get married. How can I do have a sex when my father is sitting outside waiting for me? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was as far back as I can remember, I was different. Different in a crazy sense of the word. Not that I'm Einstein. I was thinking about stuff like that. How the hell are you going to have a sex when your whole family is waiting at the back of the door to see if she was the...
But it's so stupid. You could put any blood on it.
Well, that's what I mean. I was too young to understand that. Yeah. But later when I grew up, I developed the kind of thinking that I said, fuck it, I'm not going to just do that. I'm going to go against it. I'm going to talk about it, right? So that becomes part of your activism. You talk about every side of things you don't like.
You know what I imagine? When they're making people and it's a factory and they're sorting where they're going to go, they dropped you and they're like, I guess he goes here.
And that wasn't the right place.
No. It happens.
Yeah, that's the right way to do it. Okay. Yeah.
You were sorted in the wrong place.
Yeah.
There's so much to talk about with the activism.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to skip a lot of it.
Whatever you want to ask, if I don't feel comfortable.
Not even comfortable. I'm sure it'll take 4 hours because there's so much I want to know.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So maybe I want to skip ahead.
Later. Yeah. Yeah.
To when the thought hit you that you have to leave Iran and go to wherever. I don't know if you thought, I'm going to go to Canada.
Well, you're skipping all the way to the point that I came to the disagreement with my political party, which I was a part of, right?
Yeah.
When you're young, as I said, 15 years old, you don't know shit. But when I joined the party, I had access to books, things that you cannot have access in Iran.
And how did you have access? They had libraries?
They had a very huge library.
And what was the purpose of the library?
The library to bring people who are activists in the part. In my case, it was Komala, right?
Yeah.
They wanted you to read.
But did they pick the book specifically?
Well, no, because they didn't count on people like me. They put everything there.
Okay.
And they said, these people are not kind of people who read anyway. Let them have the whole collection.
Was it like a selling point? Like, if you're with us, look what you get? No censorship kind
of
thing?
Yeah, and they didn't calculate. I'm not saying I was the first and the last, but there was always troublemakers like me, which would have learned things in a right way and then would have had questions. For example, I read The Gulag Island by Solzhenitsyn. It was way above my head, but I liked it. I didn't like Solzhenitsyn because I could see his point of stand. I could see that he's fascinated by capitalism and his hatred toward the Eastern Revolution comes from deep insight. He was an excellent writer and I enjoyed what I read. It was like 5,000 some pages. Then and the other...
Sorry, one thing. All these books are in what, Farsi?
Well, I couldn't read any other language, yeah.
Ever. But that's what they have.
Yes, yes. Yeah. All of them, a collection is a Persian, but whoever translate that Gulag thing, that was absolutely mind-boggling. Beautiful.
Have you ever gone back and read any of these in English?
Well, I tried Capital, yeah. But not the others. I don't think they're valuable enough to go and read it twice because it wasn't something that it was missing and I was desperate to find out.
No, but I don't know if you're ever curious that when they translated it, did they slip anything?
Right now, I'm speaking in English, which is not my mother tongue, right? Obviously, I would not be capable of saying 100% certainty by 100% certainty. Oh, I did translate it perfectly. No, you should be like somebody like you who really speak Kurdish and then speak perfect English. Then if you bring something to Kurdish, you can make me understand exactly what it is. But other way around, I have to make you understand the Kurdish very well, then you can make it to English. So what I had, it was beautiful. I was satisfied. It was my fun. Whenever I wasn't engaged in fighting with the regime, I had my books. Yeah.
Do you know why there were so many Russian books? It seems like there was a lot of Russian books.
First of all, not all of them are political. There are a lot of dramas, but obviously drama comes from every society with their own culture and their own understanding of values, right?
Yeah.
In some books, you read about somebody and then the same person, if you bring it to the West, they're going to call him bum. But in the Eastern culture, they're going to feel sorry for him. They try to understand his living and follow the story, right?
Yeah.
So every culture has their own heroes, their own way of thinking, and their own way of writing even dramas.
But all the books weren't Russian.
No. We had Italian.
Okay.
We had not Italian writers, not Italian books. Italian books translated to Persian. We had Hispanic books. We had Russian books. We had some American thinkers, which I can't remember the name, but we had...
But was there a theme in the library? Or was it really any book they would find they would put?
Well, you couldn't find... You could find the Quran, but it was for research only. For example, you want to go against some bullshit some cleric said, you would go and look at the verses and say, look, so that kind of book you could find. But in my party, generally, it wasn't like censorship. It wasn't like you can't bring any book in the camp. If you don't have, we don't have it and you want it, okay, let us know. We're going to try to find it for you.
So you're reading all these books and then you realize, okay, this party is also bullshit?
No, I start growing up. Let's put it...
How old were you?
I was probably 20.
That's still young.
No. With that, in that area, you're not young. When you're 20, you...
Well, you... So, timeline is you're in the army, you're 18?
Yeah, like...
So, a year and a half goes by. That's
21, maybe like that. Okay. I'm not good with the years, but I remember specifically, once you grow up, those 15 years old thinking is over. And you've seen shit. You've been engaged with Iranian regime in the fights. And you've seen things you wouldn't even imagine. Then you get your hands on your books, you start reading from everywhere. It's like going to a dark room and people start turning on the lights.
Yeah.
You see more and more what is surrounding you. Basically, we were fighting with the regime saying you cannot control people. Then you come and look at your party and you would see, hey, wait a second, we're supposed to be all revolutionary people. My vote and my idea should have been conned. You cannot just, because you're a leader, you just go and negotiate on my behalf and then come back to say, hey, we couldn't do better than this. We're a refugee people in Iraq. We have to do something in the favor of like the regime, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying they did something, but sometimes, for example, remember Halabja chemical weapon Saddam used on people.
Yeah.
So because we were in Iraq, we hated what we saw, but we couldn't officially come out. We couldn't officially say we condemn this move.
Why?
Because we were right in the under the boot of Iraqi regime. So that was the first point that I said to my leaders. I like socialism, but there is no way you can create the socialism under the boot of Saddam. So either they said, what solution do you have? All these people are known to regimes. Okay, get out.
Get out from Iraq?
Yes, get out from Iraq. You, if you're socialist and you believe world has to change, it has to be everywhere. You don't have to be only changing the Kurdistan, but this is the price I'm not able to pay. I cannot close my eyes of using of chemical weapon against 5,000 poor Kurdish people. And they say, then turn around, tell them to my colleagues, look, if we talk, they're going to kick us too. So this is not the price I'm willing to pay. So that was the beginning of reading the books, matching it with the reality, and watching, basically growing. Basically, it was my time of growing up. The story goes, then we came to Turkey.
So hold on. You decide that you want to leave.
Yeah, basically, you had the choice of continuing that life and lying to yourself. Look, I'm not undermining the other people's decision to stay there.
No, I'm just talking about you. You've made a decision.
But I made a decision. I said, this is the price I'm not willing to pay. This is not the way. And if I'm going to fight for a better world, there are tons of different ways which you don't have to close your eyes on the life of 5,000 some people.
So you decide you want out and you're going to leave. You're in Iraq at this time?
Yeah, I was in Iraq.
So do you go from Iraq to Turkey?
Yeah.
And you went to Turkey because the UN is there?
Basically, that's the first country you can get your hands on a United Nations without too much of a headache. Because let's say you go to Lebanon or Jordan, these are as militant as Saddam. You couldn't even reach the UN. Obvious choice, and the natural choice is Ankara.
Did you go alone or did you go with friends?
First, we moved with I remember, maybe this story doesn't mean anything, but I remember perfectly. We went 15 or 18 people, and I did one stupid move. The guy who was smuggling us to Turkey had a bad jammed handgun.
Why did you have to be smuggled?
Well, because the Turkey, like, either you have to go with passport. We didn't have a passport. So this guy had a jammed handgun, and as a stupid guy, I tried to help him, and I fixed his handgun. And that move scared him. He thought, all of us have a gun. And he's scared. He said, okay, what the hell? Maybe they want to take me to the other side and then kill me and get the money back, because we gave him $100 each.
Who was he? Was he Turkish?
He was Turkish. So he's scared, and he said, I'm not going to go. So that was the first attempt. The second attempt, it took me 1 month. Me and three other friends, four people, paid the other guy. This time I didn't fix anything.
I don't know anything about
guns. I don't know anything. So
what's that?
I haven't seen it. Anyway. This time we went, and there were tons of roadblocks. Fortunately, they didn't come to with too much question asking us anything. We used the bus, and we went all the way to Ankara. The next day,
but how do you even cross? Like, what do you say at a border crossing? Like, we don't have passports.
There is no border. You think this is? We weren't from normal border with the gate.
This is why I'm asking. How do you get smuggled?
You go from a place which there is no gate, no soldiers, nothing. You have, that's why you pay those guys $100
because they know the way,
because they know where to cross the river, how to go from which mountain, and how to come down to which. Even they have a house ready for us to go there and take a shower.
Oh, so you don't look like you just walked.
Yes.
And how long was the whole trip from when you started?
It was amazing. We were probably the record holder. We just walked about 3 hours. There was people who walked for 16 hours.
I've been stuck in traffic longer than it took for you to get smuggled.
Honestly, 3 hours.
That's it?
Yeah.
And you needed a shower?
Yeah, the second. But if the first time the guy wouldn't scare to cross us, that was one of those 18, 16 hours walking.
Oh, okay.
When probably we were kind of lucky that he scared, and we used the other guy, and the other guy was absolutely punctual. He had his taxi ready in the other side.
All right. Did you give him a good review?
Well, if we had a Google or back
word
then.
Of mouth.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So you get to Turkey, you shower. What's next?
You don't know anything, right? I grew up in the Azeri part of Iran, so I knew some, I had some idea about the language. It's totally different language, Azeri and Turkish, Istanbuli Turkish, but you can get by if you try. So I wasn't so scared because I could understand a word or two, but we knew where we were going because the party helped us. It wasn't just, I say, hey, bye, I'm going. The party gave me $800 US. Party gave me the two fake ID. Iraqi ID, which showed that I've been one of those people too, just to cross, right? It wasn't like 007 is crossing. We were helped, but rightfully so, because we deserve to be helped. It wasn't that we just came to some party and say, hey, help us. We helped that party grow. Okay. And then they paid for our way to go there. And
this is pretty progressive. It's like when you leave a company and they're like, here's severance, 18 weeks pay.
It wasn't fair pay because when we left, probably that party was sitting on millions upon millions of US dollars. One, each person's life wouldn't worth just $800, but that's better than a lot of other parties. So we just took whatever we could, which in my case was toothbrush and a couple of underwears and a shirt to change. And I remember a jean, which I liked a lot. That was the best jean I ever had. And that's it.
Freedom jeans?
Yes.
You get to Turkey, you kind of know where to go. When we were in Turkey, I remember mom telling us, don't speak Kurdish here.
Now that you brought it up, the first thing took my attention in Turkey, the house that they took us for shower, it was mind-boggling. The guy had four wives. The point which made me very upset was when they created food for us and we start eating, I asked the guy, I said, why your wife are eating separately? And he said, no, they're not eating separately. They wait until we eat and we finish. They're going to eat whatever leftover we have. And that was shocking to me. I couldn't understand. I couldn't believe what I'm hearing from Kurdistan, part of Turkey.
That's shocking now.
That even now.
Yeah.
And imagine my eyebrow back then.
All right. That's the end of part one. In part two, we talk about his experience applying for refugee status in the UN, his life in Turkey, how he actually met my mom, and his view of the world today and tomorrow.